From WCVE News in Richmond, I'm Craig Carper. Joining me now from the Richmond Times-Dispatch is political columnist and WCVE's political analyst, Jeff Shapiro. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Craig.
We are now in the midst of the 2018 General Assembly session, and after much speculation and infinite scenarios on how the power balance in the House of Delegates might play out, Speaker in waiting, Speaker designee Kirk Cox is now Speaker of the House.
And he waited long enough. Kirk Cox, a veteran delegate from Colonial Heights, a delegate who, by the way, as an influential conservative within the Republican caucus, saved Bill Howell's speakership in 2004 when anti-tax Republicans threatened to seek Howell's removal if he allowed that giant tax increase on the floor, the one that Mark Warner pushed and won. But that, of course, is ancient history. What, of course, made it interesting is that it was not terribly interesting. That is the Cox elevation. After all the huffing and puffing and all the to-ing and fro-ing and the recounts and the re-recounts and the drawings that followed the elections, the Republican majority survived, albeit barely. There were 32 more Republicans in the House before the legislature convened. Now there are only two in the House specifically. What we need to look for and look more closely at, forgive me for ending my sentence with a preposition, is what about the committee structure? With 49 Democrats, there are going to be a lot more Democrats on committees. And for the most part in House committees, there are going to be 12 Republicans and anywhere from 8 to 10 Democrats. But I would argue that one has to look more closely at which Democrats were placed on whatever committee, that Republicans were probably concerned about putting more threatening Democrats in committees where they could do less damage. So this is going to have to play out over the weeks ahead. There were some victories for the Democrats in terms of some of the changes in House business. For example, recorded votes by subcommittees. As my colleagues at the paper, Graham Mumma among them, are fond of pointing out, these subcommittees are the killing fields. And for many years, they were places where bills would die on unrecorded votes. That is no longer the case. I guess we also need to look at the makeup of the House. There are a lot more women in the General Assembly, at 38 now in the House. That number rises from 17 to 28, 16 new Democrats, 3 new Republicans. Those 38 total seats that are occupied by women, that's 38 of 140 in the legislature, better than 25%. Those numbers include the first Latina women, 2, the first Asian woman, first transgender woman. There is definitely a different attitude. And then there is a generational shift that's evident in the new membership. 14 of those 19 new members are millennials.
And this Wednesday evening, Governor Terry McAuliffe bid adieu to Virginia.
Yes, and the blustery Irishman did so with a big smile and at about 114 decibels at times. He departs as a symbol of the accelerating change in Virginia. It was certainly evident when he was elected in 2013, but it is even more widespread and more evident now. That includes a much more diverse, truly a multi-hued Virginia, one with a fairly strong economy, considerably stronger than the economy he inherited when he took office in 2014. What we have seen concurrent with the McAuliffe governorship is the increasing nationalization of Virginia politics. He's an ideal symbol of that as a guy who was a national figure before he became a Virginia figure. A lot of the things he talked about in that valedictory included retooling the economy after the difficulties of the early days of the McAuliffe years, rights restoration, battling with the Republicans over reenfranchising men and women who had committed felonies and had completed their penalties, and also talking about Charlottesville and the murderous violence that occurred up there and what that said about Virginia and some of the troubling findings and what painful lessons there will be for the new administration and the new General Assembly and how to better anticipate these problems, how to better manage them.
And speaking of, Jeff, shortly after noon tomorrow, Governor-elect Ralph Northam will take the oath of office as Virginia's 73rd governor.
Yes, the first Eastern Shoresman since Henry Wise in 1855 to serve as governor, and the first graduate of the Virginia Military Institute in 100 years to serve as governor. The last one was Westmoreland Davis. Northam takes office with a number of advantages, certainly that fortified minority and the Democratic minority in the House of Delegates, a much stronger economy, a sharp increase in tax collections in the closing months of the McAuliffe administration, roughly 6% increase so far. This augurs a robust start to Northam's term and seems to increase to some degree the likelihood that there will be Medicaid expansion, something on which Terry McAuliffe struck out four times in a bitter battle with the Republicans. That expansion could free up, just in the first years of the Northam administration, about $400 million a year to pump into other goodies. The new governor has also completed his cabinet this week, naming Esther Lee. She's the vice chair of the Fairfax Economic Development Authority as his commerce and trade secretary. She's a Harvard and MIT alumna. And it's interesting, into this secretariat, the new governor will be folding part of the technology secretariat, and responsibility for that embattled state computer agency, VITA, will be handled by the Secretary of Administration. One last point. The new governor is fond of saying, or he's fond of arguing, that his cabinet will be the first in which women are in the majority, with women occupying 8 of 15 seats. Perhaps he should look a little bit more closely at his history. It was in 1986 that Jerry Blyles, a Democratic governor, named a cabinet of then 7 secretaries, 4 of whom were women, one of whom, Vivian Watts, was transportation secretary and is back in the House of Delegates, Virginia's longest-serving female legislator.
Thanks to Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Jeff, we will catch up again next week.
Good weekend to you.